Hi, I'm Dr. Chris Cannon, and on behalf of CME Outfitters, I'd like to welcome you and thank you for joining us in today's educational activity. This activity is brought to you by CME Outfitters, an award-winning accredited provider of continuing medical education for clinicians across the globe. There are several really neat features that are being offered by CME Outfitters. They're providing resources for both patients and providers. So first, CME Outfitters would like to try and integrate digital health tools, and so they partnered up with a group called Pack Health, and will offer to 75 patients personalized digital health coaching for up to 3 months. Then for clinicians, CME Outfitters will be offering an e-consult service at no cost for up to 100 clinicians who sign up. The group Arista MD will be providing the e-consult service to clinicians at no cost for a 30-day period. And then finally, CME Outfitters has developed two patient education tools. One really nice whiteboard animation that describes non-valvular atrial fibrillation, its symptoms, risk factors, and treatment, as well as a downloadable list of questions that the patient could ask their doctor or healthcare professional regarding non-valvular atrial fibrillation. So, want to introduce us as a group. My name is Chris Cannon. I'm the education director at the Cardiovascular Medicine Institute, or Innovation, at Brigham and Women's Hospital, and a professor at Harvard Medical School. And looking forward to an active discussion that will focus on strategies and tools for improving care. And we'll begin with a good friend, colleague, and world expert, Dr. Elaine Heilig, who's the director of the Thrombosis and Anticoagulation Service at Boston Medical Center and a professor of medicine at Boston University School of Medicine here in Boston. Also want to introduce Dr. Deepak Bhatt, another good friend and colleague, and he's the executive director of interventional cardiovascular programs at Brigham and Women's Hospital and the Heart and Vascular Center, and also a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. So want to welcome both of you for this terrific program, and we look forward to being a global community with all of you who are joining online. And so we'll move on to, I think, the next segment that we'll talk about, moving on to incorporating the use of digital health tools. And I talked about how we have lots of them available to everyone, and so want to make sure to share all those with. And that can really facilitate a collaborative care approach to try and optimize treatments for patients. So we'll start with our final question here, asking the question of, do you incorporate digital health tools, either web-based apps or smartphone apps or e-consults in the management of atrial fibrillation? And ranges from 0 to 100%, so we'll be interested to see what's our current use, and I think this will obviously evolve over time. Why don't we start the discussion with shared decision making, which is a key buzzword to say that we should work with our patients, but how does this fit in for an AFib patient? Elaine, is that something that you would do in the office?
Well, I mean, the concept of shared decision making, I would certainly hope that that's been the way I've been practicing for the last 20 years. but I think shared decision making is like a formalized exercise, which I think is important because it's making sure that our patients, aren't listening to some paternalistic doctor, but are actually armed with the facts themselves. And then together, the patient and the physician can discuss, should I be worried about that? Well, probably not really. Well, how do I put this in perspective? What are my risks? And I think that it's really become a critical component of performance measuring, is having these types of tools available for AF. So I do think that they clearly have a role in practice.
Yeah. Well, there are some studies that are just getting started. You want to comment on this? Ask the question of
so, why are these coming about? I think they're coming about because it's all about patient education. So I'm all for it. But I get a little bit nervous looking at this study, anticoagulation choice, two components, calculating that CHADS VAS score, which has a lot of evidence for it, and that bleeding. And remember, we talked about you know, calculating the bleeding score. And I would want to be certain that this study is being, you know, really transparent about, you know, a bleed, although scary for a patient, it's really never going to have the lasting deficit of an ischemic stroke. Yeah. So that it's not a simple calculation and comparing a CHA2DS2-VASc of 4, a HAS-BLED of 4, or a HAS-BLED of 5 or 3 or 2 on the CHA2DS2-VASc. So that's my only hope, because those factors overlap. It's bleeding has age in it, it has hypertension in it, it has prior stroke in it. Many of those overlap with the CHA2DS2-VASc. So I think it's just important. I use the HAS-BLED score as a checklist to make sure I'm controlling the blood pressure, making sure the D, that my patient isn't on a drug like ibuprofen that's going to increase the risk of bleeding. So I use it as sort of a flag to make sure that among these factors that we have control over, that we're actually doing something about it.
Oh, terrific. Well, there's another study we noticed. Deepak, do you want to comment on this next slide that looks again at whether digital tools could facilitate this process?
Yeah, so another interesting study called Impact AF, and it's looking at electronic clinical decision support systems to see if they can improve in a primary care setting care of these sorts of folks. And it includes all sorts of nifty things, a patient-specific software app that can run on a smartphone or on a PC for that matter. It allows patients to track their heart rate, their blood pressure, that gets relayed to their healthcare provider. So, you know, it seems like a useful sort of strategy. Patients can also record out-of-pocket expenses and sort of issues that arise from, you know, measuring their INR, not being able to show up to work and that sort of thing. So it could give then their healthcare provider a sense of exactly what's going on in their life in terms of their AFib and, you know, what changes might be done. And I think it might be a good way to bring in the patient.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's been a recent review that talks about what are the potential here. Do you want to talk about, is this for real? We put a question mark and it's early, I think.
Well, you know, the problem with this field, of course, is there's a lot of excitement. And I think as physicians, we need to embrace it because, as I said before, it doesn't matter whether we do or not. Our patients are already embracing it, and younger generations even more so. So I think we've got to be on board. But what we've got to try to do is, you know, before the genie's completely out of the bottle, you know, try to study these different modalities and see if they really improve outcomes. And, you know, here was a study, for example, or an article claiming, you know, that there's going to be mortality reductions with these sorts of digital health approaches. And that might be true. Intuitively, I would like to think that's true. But we don't need to prove it before saying things like that. Otherwise, there's some risk of hyping the field before it really has time to mature.
Yeah. Well, I'll go quickly through these. The ESC has several apps for patients and providers. And, you know, you can see a display of these here of My AF would be for the patient and then AFib Manager and, you know, has all the risk stratification tools. I think the next slide also then has a depiction of some of the other tools that the ESC has. And so I think it's nice to see our societies are providing these apps. So the next segment is to look at access to cardiologists and specialists. How does that relate? And this was an interesting study that looked at the density of cardiologists in the region. And the middle bullet there looked in patients with MI and heart failure, so not atrial fibrillation, where if there were fewer cardiologists, that was associated with like a 9% adjusted difference in mortality. So suggesting that availability of more advanced care and cardiologists may relate to outcomes and a similar finding in AFib. I think these are just observational analysis, but you know, I think speaking to this is a multifactorial disease and we have to take it seriously.
Right, and I also want to make a plea though, because you know, if we're holding ourselves out as nurse practitioners or physician assistants or you know the primary care physician, the general internist, you know, step up. Because, you know, if you have these patients, I mean, you need to be doing the simple stuff, like the CHADS VAS score, sitting down with a patient and getting them, I would say, that day. And also, of course, get your cardiology consult, your specialist, my two friends here involved. But my goodness, we're physicians, and I think that first thing, we have to recognize it, and we have to know what to do, including consult our colleagues.
Yeah. So one of the ways to build a care group is, I think, based at where you are, but then availability of specialists by e-consults is a growing field. I know colleagues have done an analysis, just at the Mass General, even of access there by a time, right. not a distance barrier. Do you want to comment, Deepak, on the potential here?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a lot of potential for e-consults. Actually, back when I was chief of cardiology at the VA here in town, I was tasked with setting up the e-consult service for cardiology, and there, you know, we've got veterans coming in from Maine and all sorts of places, and, you know, having an e-consult service can really help. But even more locally, it can speed up the time to actually getting that opinion. And, you know, a lot of things don't really need a face-to-face, and even if they do, there are ways of remotely checking in on patients with current video technology. So I think there's the opportunity, at least, to improve outcomes, certainly access to care, increase patient satisfaction. Somebody doesn't have to drive in or wait 3 months for an appointment. That can make them happy. And it can improve specialist access. It might even, you know, decrease the cost of care. And it doesn't mean that there won't always still need to be a follow-up in-person visit, but, you know, at least as a first triaging mechanism, it can be quite effective.
Yeah. Well, I called out in the beginning the fact that our CME provider has developed collaboration, and these are the notion of an e-consult, that you would connect primary care physicians with board-certified specialists, and so they've arranged for one of these services to be available for the first 100 participants who sign up, and so definitely encourage you to think about that as an option for you. And you can see an array of Arista MD is one company, but then several others have developed this service. I think on the patient side of things, we talked also about really empowering the patient as a key part of this. And so here's a coaching program that's a 12-week program, and this is probably the Koumanen Clinic sort of applied to total care, where you get someone to talk through and discuss. And, you know, this notion has been seen in other settings to increase treatment adherence. Mm-hmm. And so, the next slide, this also is available for the first 75 patients to get referred to this. And again, some of the numbers that support prior work in this field of increasing medication adherence with a program like this, and certainly patient satisfaction, I think, goes up, and awareness. And so I think it's an exciting thing to see these benefits. We talked about a whiteboard for patients, and so this is a little screenshot of this, that this is available. You can download, show it on an iPad for patients that have atrial fibrillation, certainly new diagnosis. This would be a great way, and there's also a downloadable set of questions to ask and really start give the domain of what are the topics that we need to worry about with atrial fibrillation. And so the final slide is one that has a good acronym of having SMART goals for this. And Deepak, do you want to comment on what we would be aiming for with all these tools?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the bottom line is we want to try to implement evidence-based screening tools and figure out ways to identify who's at risk for AF. That's really the goal here. And then to make it actionable, that is not just to diagnose, but to treat where appropriate. And as we discussed, for the majority of folks that have real AF and CHADS VAS scores of 2 or above, and I think all of us actually said 1 or above, anticoagulation would seem in order, again, barring some contraindication. And potentially then, you know, incorporating these different digital tools we've discussed and others might facilitate guideline-directed care, shared decision-making, and ultimately improve quality of life for patients. Doesn't mean that we don't need more data on how to refine those strategies, make sure they're cost-effective, but certainly the field is moving in that direction.
Well, thank you all very much for joining today's program. It's been a delight doing it with you.